This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
Thank you, Shannon. Here's Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis with Grand Rapids Mayor George Hartwell.
We're pleased today to have Grand Rapids Mayor George Hartwell with us. You've delivered your ninth State of the City address in January and urged a crowd to put children in front and center. So what did you mean by that? Because that's a very important statement on behalf, you know, the Michigan State's values.
If I could pick a defining topic for my term as mayor, no matter how long it would be, it would be children. And so the very first State of the City address focused on children, focused on public education, the relationship between the city and the schools. And then, of course, the fourth week happened, and you move along, and some of that initial passion gets chewed up by other issues that come along and other challenges that you have. So having been reelected a second time, serving now my third term, I decided it was going to be important for me to recover that initial passion, that initial effort to make this a better city for our kids. And that means a lot of things. First of all, Grand Rapids still has an unacceptably high poverty rate. 36% of our children in Grand Rapids are living in poverty households. So it means quality of life issues. It means addressing the employment for families. It means addressing housing issues and lead safety issues, nutrition issues. But then it also means supporting our Grand Rapids public schools and doing the things that we need to do here to make sure that all of our kids get a great education.
George, I think as you're going through a process like this, there's kind of two fronts. One is generating the support not only for K through 12, but then higher education in the state of Michigan. The second thing that parallels that is the motivation for young kids to approach the opportunities that are developed because of the support that you come out. Programs that you're putting in play in Grand Rapids and perhaps talking across the state that that are aimed at the motivation of kids. Are you into that that line as mayor?
Well, I am, and we've. Thanks for mentioning that, Mark. I have a joint office that the City of Grand Rapids manages with our Grand Rapids Public Schools. It's called Our Community's Children, and it's the place where, you know, it's really the only formal interface that we have with our public schools. We're different governance structures, we're different administrative structures, different funding streams, but this is the place where we come together and we work on joint initiatives. One that I know you're familiar with and I had only had passing knowledge of but have gotten very enthusiastic about is the Upward Bound program, preparing kids for college, working with them through their high school years to ensure that they are college ready. In Grand Rapids, the program is managed by Grand Valley State University and Grand Rapids Community College. Their success rate is phenomenal. They're sending 90 to 95% of the kids who complete the Upward Bound program, go on to college, and they graduate at the same rate, graduate from college at the same rate as their peers in any of the finest suburban districts in the state. The difference is these kids are, in order to qualify for the program, are coming from poverty households, and they are first generation college. So we've set out here in Grand Rapids now to double the numbers of kids that can get into the Upward Bound program. It's federally funded. The money is not abundant, and we said we can raise and match those federal dollars so that we can get more kids into Upward Bound.
I think it's George. I think it's almost a two-step process. One is having motivation for the kids for higher ed, and then it's creating opportunities, creating jobs, creating environments for those that come out of programs at Michigan State or other universities across the state of Michigan to be able to find jobs and stay here versus fleeing to other states, which many students have been doing in the past. I know you're looking at many programs. I was following up on the wind turbine initiative on the west side of the state, a little bit similar to what's being done up near Mount Pleasant, and creating new opportunities, creating new jobs, creating new initiatives to motivate kids to come out of high school, go to higher education, and then have a place. And Grand Rapids is one of those hubs that is very attractive to college students.
Well, thank you. I mean, there. No matter what we say as politicians about creating jobs, there's truly very, very few jobs that we create, other than those in city government or in the case of a governor in state government. But we can help to create the environment that's attractive to business, where business wants to locate and grow and provide those employment opportunities. I believe that this whole field of renewable energy, whether it's in the production of wind turbines or solar displays, has already proven to be a job producer for us across the state of Michigan. I mean, we've got local companies that have shifted their production lines from making parts for automobiles to making parts for wind turbines now. And so I think that, you know, we can, through perhaps tax incentives, which we use to the extent that they're available, through creating an attractive community, maintaining infrastructure so that transportation of product is simpler and safer. All of those are things that municipal government can and truly must do.
Mayor, I've admired the work you've done, but I want to come back to the kids for a moment. What I admire is your capacity, the capacity of Grand Rapids, West Michigan, to think about these numbers as not sort of sugarcoating the numbers of kids in poverty in Grand Rapids, but seeing them as a number to move downward through really applying business tactics, business techniques, and pulling people together in the community to make this an our problem, not the problem of some particular neighborhood. How do you think that philosophy could translate to some other places in the state who often look at Grand Rapids and see only the shiny skyline?
Well, it's a good and a valid question, Madam President. We were certainly proud week before last, that Forbes magazine on their e-edition listed Grand Rapids as the best city in the country to raise a child. And they looked at raise a family, I guess was the category. They looked at crime statistics. They looked at educational statistics. They looked at higher ed in the community. They looked at affordability of housing and a number of other factors like that. And lo and behold, we popped up to the top of the list of the 100 largest cities in the country as the best place to raise a family. Pretty easy to rest on those laurels, I suppose, and say, wow, aren't we, you know, isn't that phenomenal? Aren't we great? But the fact of the matter is we still have an unemployment rate that is unacceptable. We still have children living in poverty. We still have children subjected to lead and the risks of lead poisoning in their homes. And those are issues that we simply have to address. Maybe a better answer to your question is that any city can and should be measuring a wide set of indicators around well-being, and not only economic indicators, but also social indicators and environmental indicators. So Grand Rapids, through our sustainability plan, the municipal sustainability plan, has 72 goal areas that we measure, and we publish on our website a report that gets updated quarterly. It's easy to read. It's got, you know, the red light, yellow light, green light indicators for each of those measurements, and you got to publish them whether they're good, bad, or ugly, and when you do that, it sort of keeps everybody's feet to the fire. So measuring and reporting transparency is, I believe, critical to accomplishing the good things we need to do.
It does take courage to be transparent.
In a public institution like yours or like mine, we're certainly always open for criticism, and so when you put your when you are transparent, you put your numbers out there, you really set yourself up.
But I also think it gives a capacity to create the fact that you can pull together coalitions of people to help move those numbers, and that coalition may not be the same coalition at any given time because the issues and challenges change, but the direction of change for the community is still one that's at the forefront of on everyone's mind.
Well, that's true. That's a very interesting comment because you think back over some of the things that you've done at the university, some of the things we've done here in the city. At any given time, you're going to have a different set of partners or stakeholders working on those issues. And if there's a hallmark of our time, it's the fluidity of those kind of collections or of leaders. Depending on the circumstances, depending on the environmental factors that you're facing at any moment, depending on the funding that's availability, you're going to have to put together creative collections of stakeholders, which is all the more reason not to burn bridges.
Well, we've really appreciated your leadership in both a public way as well as behind the scenes as we've been able to grow our presence for the College of Human Medicine and Michigan State University in general in Grand Rapids. People don't always know that we've been in Grand Rapids for over 40 years. And so when the announcement of the expansion of the medical school was made, it was like somebody knew would come to the community. And you were really instrumental in helping us both explain and understand that history, but also chart a course forward that made that presence in Grand Rapids not simply about Michigan State, but about the community. So you want to talk a bit about that experience, and I want to again thank you publicly for your leadership.
Well, I appreciate that, but I'll tell you what Michigan State University did in the expansion of its presence here in Grand Rapids with the College of Human Medicine is nothing short of astounding, I think, for us as a community. I'm looking out my sixth floor window here in City Hall, across at the Esekia Center, with Michigan State University emblazoned across the top of the building, and right next door to it, on the other side of Michigan Street, I'm looking at the Van Andel Research Institute doing world-class research on cancer and neurological disorders, and sort of framing both buildings out my windows here is the Spectrum Health Hospital Complex, the DeVos Children's Hospital, the Meyer Cancer Center, the Lemon Holton Cancer Center, the Meyer Heart Center. And what I've come to understand is that we had this robust medical practice here in Grand Rapids, and we had this new and well-endowed research institute in Grand Rapids. But what was missing was the bridge between research and practice, and that's what the university brought. So you have your MD, PhDs here in Grand Rapids working with medical students and doing clinical trials, using the facilities of the Van Andel Research Institute and the hospitals, and it's created quite a remarkable synergy here around medical practice, research, and education.
Well, we're really excited about it. I think if you look at the neuroscience group that's been assembled in Grand Rapids with the combination of Van Andel Research Institute and Michigan State, it's a very impressive group, and it will continue to grow, as will other researchers that will hopefully make the kind of discoveries that will have a profound difference in people's lives. We're probably not out your window, but also a key partner for us is St. Mary's Health.
Absolutely. I can't quite see that far, but there are buildings in my way. But, you know, St. Mary's, along with Spectrum, has been instrumental in working with you and making all this happen. I mean, the other interesting thing is not only, of course, are we looking at the research that's coming out of this as improving people's lives, as you've said, but we've already begun to see the small startup businesses that are coming out of the technologies and the discoveries that are emerging from that complex of education, medicine, and research. So there are any number of small startup companies in Grand Rapids today that could be the Pfizers of the future. So that too is very exciting.
I think, Mayor, that circles it all the way back, is creating that environment, creating that location where people want to live, where young people want to live, and once you can do that, it has nothing but positives there. I also want to compliment you on the sustainability efforts that you put forward. I think you're listed as one of the greenest cities, and to an athletic director at Michigan State, there's nothing better than hearing you're one of the greenest cities, and we just try to make
green.
It greener every day.
Yeah, you got any plans to bring the basketball team down here to play in the arena this next year?
Well, Rich McKeegan and I think I'm speaking at an event where he's bringing in arena leaders from across the country and maybe across the world to Grand Rapids here in the next month. And we're always in conversations with Rich. He's one of the great individuals there in Grand Rapids who takes his job and really reaches out, I think, across the community, and he's a great ambassador for your city as well. So we're always in conversations. You never know when either Michigan State or the NCAA may be knocking on your door.
Mayor, are there any closing comments you'd like to make about your city, your area, as we close off?
Well, I'd like to thank you for reaching out to me for the program, President Simon, and it's this relationship that has been formed and is growing between Michigan State and Grand Rapids is a very important one for both of us. And my job is to keep this city on the cutting edge so that you never regret your decision to make the investment that you've made here in our city. And I think we're headed in the right direction now. So thanks for your partnership.
Well, we appreciate it very much. Michigan State has a responsibility in terms of place to the entire state of Michigan, and it's been our honor to be able to work in Grand Rapids along with many other cities in the state. So thanks for your leadership.
Thank you, Mayor.
Good to talk to you both.
That was Grand Rapids Mayor George Hartwell talking with Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis and Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. To hear the conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. Please stay with us. In a moment, Simon and Hollis return to talk with MSU College of Engineering Dean Satish Udpa.
Visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. We've all heard the expression, it's all about who you know. And wherever you are on your career ladder, having a friend on the inside can make all the difference. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, you're instantly connected to 500,000 Spartans around the world, many of whom are key decision makers in just about every major enterprise. Whether you're looking for a way in or a way up, your MSU Alumni Association affiliation can help you link up with that MSU alum who'll always take your call just because you're a Spartan. Building your network right now before you need it is the best possible career insurance, and joining the MSU Alumni Association is the best possible way to get the most out of your Spartan life. Learn more online at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
The University Research Corridor, empowering Michigan.
This is an association of the three research universities in Michigan to really collaborate on a deeper level than we have in the past and highlight for ourselves and for the region and for the nation the strength in technology, innovation, new research, investment that we think is going to help change the Michigan economy.
That's University of Michigan President Mary Sue Coleman.
The mission of the URC is no less than to help transform the Michigan economy and to make this a vibrant place that young people will want to come and stay, that businesses will want to be in, because we are a place where a lot is happening and we have the brain power for the new economy. It's here. It's in Michigan. We just need to tap it.
Visit us online at urcmich.org.
So Michigan is vibrant. Michigan has all these things, and we want to signal that to the entire world.
Visit the University Research Corridor online at urcmich.org.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
Thank you, Shannon. Here's Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis with Michigan State University College of Engineering Dean Satish Udpa.
Well, it's our pleasure to welcome Dean Satish Udpa to our program. Now, if I were to pick a dean that exemplifies the best leadership of Michigan State, Satish would be high on my list.
Thank you.
But not simply for his passion about his own field and being an eminent scientist, but also his capacity to put together very different kinds of ideas into new ones. And so think about for us and for our listeners how you think engineering has changed and where you see it going. If you were a young person, somebody had a child, and they're thinking about why would they want to be an engineer?
I can address that question in two ways, from an educational perspective as well as from the kinds of research activities that we are engaged in currently. In years past, engineering used to be our game, and our game alone. We were at the top of the field, and the world was our oyster. That thing has changed. That, has changed in the last few years. We have competitors now from all parts of the world, and such things as routine engineering will probably go away because there are cheaper and less expensive ways of designing things elsewhere in the world. So in order for our engineers to do well, we've got to operate at a much higher level than we used to just a few years ago. Also, the way we train our engineers to work for the next 30, 40 years, it's going to change. We've got to make sure that our students have the requisite skills, have the requisite background in order to be able to survive in this very, very competitive world. Let's take the case of automobiles. Today, we have what are called hybrid automobiles. And when we have these hybrid engines, are these devices mechanical devices? Are they electrical devices? Are they chemical devices? If you look at a hybrid vehicle, it's a mechanical thing because it moves around. Much of the power comes from electrical devices. So one can argue that it's an electrical device. More than three quarters of a weight, or half the weight at least, comes from batteries, which are chemical devices. So when you ask an engineer to work on a hybrid vehicle, the question is, what sort of an engineer do we want? In years past, when we used to label people as mechanical engineers or electrical engineers, you essentially put blinkers on them, and they refused to work outside of that discipline. today we want people to be problem solvers rather than mechanical engineers or electrical engineers. We want them to be Renaissance engineers, be able to grapple with some of these issues and be able to address some of the problems. That's the kind of engineer that we are training today.
I almost, in athletics, one of my biggest frustrations as an athletic director is specialization of duties. Yes. And in my opinion, has had a negative impact on so much of what we do. And we find that when you used to have four people that would run a team, you now maybe have 20, and there's all these different dynamics that go into it. It almost sounds like you're describing the same thing rather than somebody who comes in from an engineering perspective and designs a car. Now you have this complication of confusion, right. Who it is, which curriculum are they coming right. through, and it's very similar to what I've experienced right. as an athletic director. Yeah.
Your problems come packaged in a slightly different way, but the basic issues are the same. In addition to technical issues, we've got to make sure that these students are savvy when it comes to market dynamics. You know, we want to make sure that these people understand how the marketplace works, you know, what is it that we need to do in order to make sure that these products that we design gets translated, you know, into the market. There's also one other thing that we've been remiss in pursuing. For a number of years now, we've been wonderful in coming up with ideas. If you look at the last 20, 30 years, we've come up with a lot of ideas, for example, in storage technologies and coding technologies. But eventually, if you look at it, most of the products come from the Far East. We have not been good at translating things again, from the idea stage into this thing. And so one of the challenges we need to address is to make sure that when we train our engineers, we equip them with the skills and the creativity to move things from the idea stage to reality.
Our the program Spartan Engineering right now is becoming a model around the country that was launched like 4 years ago now, really put students in the position of having to do hands-on activities right. as teams when they walk into the door, right. not because they've been selected as the premier student, but that every student needs to have that kind of experience to become the engineering that you're talking about. So what's been sort of the reaction to the students of having to make a race car from vegetables on day one and do all these kinds of projects in the context of their residence hall rooms?
Right. I think our goal is to sort of connect students with their passion. Students often come to us with some specific ideas in mind. They want to be working on the next generation of automobiles. They want to be working on the next generation of space vehicles and so forth. But we never used to give them an opportunity to sort of get engaged in design, get engaged in engineering. We used to throw a lot of physics, math, chemistry at them in the first 2-3 years. And to some extent, there was a disconnect between what the student wanted to pursue and you know, what he was or she was doing. Today, when we come into Spartan Engineering, the first thing that we do is give you a design exercise. It could be design a robot that goes from point A to point B through a maze. The smartest, the average student will probably take a measuring tape, make sure that the robot is programmed to go from point A to point B. The slightly smarter student will equip that robot with appropriate sensors, acoustic sensors, optical sensors, and make sure it doesn't bump into a wall. The smartest of them will equip that robot with learning algorithms. Algorithms are, you know, mechanisms that make sure that the robot doesn't make the same mistake twice. So we have students who are given an opportunity to exercise their creativity, challenge their ability to do things right from day one. And that has added a lot of value to the curriculum. You know, we take pride in the fact that we don't always get the smartest of students, but by the time they get done, they can stand head-to-head and toe-to-toe with the smartest of the lot and from anywhere in the world. I think our joy, if you will, comes from adding value to the education that they receive here.
See, I would design it just to jump over the maze and land on the target.
That's right.
So that would be that would be my approach.
Yes. And I can assure you, there are some that could do that. There are some who sit in the dormitory and use their iPad to, guide the robot. So the students come up with all sorts of creative things.
I think the main thing about, as I've gone over and watched students, because there are some pretty traditional exercises they're doing in addition to the computer-based exercises, is a sense about really using their hands to do things, not simply to sort of design it on a screen and say, gee whiz, if it works in my computer, it must work in the world.
Absolutely. That is critical. And in fact, it goes back to the point I made earlier. We've got to train our students to make sure that it's not just coming up with ideas. We've got to create the next generation of Googles and the Microsofts and other companies. So one of the things that we are building right now is what's called a toolbox, and we have called it by different names, a Fab Lab and so forth. This is almost a 24/7 facility where students would be able to walk in and build things, not just with machine tools, but also printed circuit boards, even bacteria. The idea here is to give students an opportunity to build things. One of the things that we're pushing is what's called additive manufacturing. This is a national priority right now. In years past, you used to take a piece of raw material, machine it down. In other words, you go from outside to the inside. In additive technologies now, people are building from inside out. They are using printers, for example, to build three-dimensional objects. And the advantage there is that you can design each layer in the material differently. We want our students to be savvy about these new technologies. And so the new lab will be equipped with all the things that the students will be using when they get out into the real world for the next 30, 40 years. But the basic idea is to be able to build, create, design at a much higher level than they used to just a few years ago.
When I think about the research programs of the college and its connection with other colleges, there are obviously some things that come to mind that are very, very dynamic, and you may want to talk about Beacon and explain what it is and how it pulls together so many disciplines into some what can be some very path-breaking discoveries.
Right. Well, man has been in the engineering business for the last 5,000-10,000 years. Engineers have been around since the pyramids were built. But nature has been in this business for millions of years, and it has learned a few tricks that we haven't mastered as yet. So the goal of this Beacon project is to look at how nature designs things. How do designs evolve over a period of time? And by doing so, we can do two things. One is we can mimic the process on a computer, make sure that we can design these things much more rapidly. For example, if I want to know how an E. coli, if a bacteria, evolves when it is subject to a different environment, I should be able to simulate that evolution, if you will, on a computer much more rapidly. What would take nature, maybe a year, I can simulate that in a few minutes. That's one of the things. So it should be possible for us, using the tools that we have developed here, to sort of predict where nature is headed in a few years. But the more important thing is we are learning from nature, and we are using that to build the next generation of widgets. So when you're talking about an antenna, for example, for your automobile, these algorithms have helped us designing the next generation of antennas. Surprisingly, the designs that come out of these tools don't look anything like what we have been doing for the last 50, 60 years. Strange-looking antennas, strange-looking bumpers, automotive bumpers. But at the end of the day, they perform a lot better than conventional designs. They look different, they feel different, but their performance, metrics are much, much better. So it's a different way to get to, doing engineering. It's exciting, and that's what Beacon is all about.
I think, our world or our nation has really gone from a internal to a global marketplace significantly over the past years. President Simon even took us from land grant to world grant in one scope. How do you, as a dean of the College of Engineering, wrestle with both, students coming in from not only across the United States but across the world, and students going out, and what your responsibility is, I guess, as the dean in that capacity to build engineers for the world.
I feel excited when I look at the demographics of the student population in the college and in the university. This is a wonderful time. You know, we see people from all parts of the globe coming here to this country, getting trained. In one sense, that's the history of this country. You know, we have taken advantage of the immigrants who come here, captured their imagination, captured their abilities, and gone on to do some wonderful things in the world. This is a step in that direction. So when I see students from Asia, for example, in the college, there's much that we can learn from them. There's much that we can learn from them. These are civilizations that have been around much longer than we have been. And so there are things that we can do, things that we can learn from these people. Our students benefit from the interactions that they have. Increasingly, our classrooms are places where you can have collisions of ideas, not just from people of our own kind, but from people from all parts of the world. And so what the president has done is basically given our students an opportunity to learn from much more than what can be conveyed in a classroom setting.
I think when you bring that back onto campus, there's, even when you talk about our friends down the road, there is a level of competition and there's a level of collaboration that must exist and does exist between institutions within the Big Ten or beyond. Does that come into play with the College of Engineering as far as competition, students to students, but also collaboration when they're in those competitive environments?
And that's precisely what we are trying to accomplish here. Students have to learn that, you know, we live in a very competitive world, but there are also opportunities to join hands and get things done. The nature of education is going to change in the next few years because of all these market forces. And institutions that sort of recognize this and learn from this thing are going to do a lot better.
I think the challenge we face, if you look at universities and the competition globally, because, you know, if you look at the top 100 list of universities now, 30 years ago, there were a couple, the names that have been around for 500 years from Europe and maybe one in Asia. But now that's changed dramatically. Sometimes they're doing it by jointly appointing our faculty, then counting their publications. Sometimes they're doing it in the more fundamental way of growth. So I think the competition is there. And what we're trying to emulate, I think, for our students, and if you go over and do the freshman Spartan Engineering experience, you have to understand how others work, even if you're going to compete against them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think about the amount of time an athletic coach spends watching films, I mean, just right. as you right. use the right. example, you can't necessarily be successful athletically if you're just in your own little cocoon
right.
and you don't understand what others are doing around you or the way they think, mm-hmm. the way they behave. So there's a bit of all of this that really does, if you look at it in the same way that football coaches look at all the things that they do, enhances our competition because the students can experience that here. And then they can do it also in aggressive study abroad programs. Along with that, the barriers for knowledge creation with the internet are now gone. And so instead of simply partnering with a university down the road or in another state, as we have done for years and years and years regarding major projects, you look to those partnerships to the best people around the world because they're going to still be good. So your partnership with them isn't going to deter their being good. It may change the rate of being good, but you also then lose your capacity to be better.
Right.
And so it's this delicate balance of making sure that you protect your faculty's interests, protect your students' interest in this process because they are the individuals that you are personally responsible with, but at the same time, you have to understand that with the way the technology has changed the world, as it has in football mm-hmm. or basketball, in terms of the kinds of films that you have to be able to work in both of those spaces. And hopefully, we're training students in an environment that models that behavior when they leave here.
So Satish indirectly came up with the two new three C's, complicated, competitive, and collaborative.
Right.
Right.
So exactly. Yes.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
And you're joining in on the conversation between Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon, Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis, and MSU College of Engineering Dean Satish Udpa.
Your personal research has been in more of the electrical slash biomedical area. And I've heard you talk about both collaborations with the College of Business and Communication Arts and Sciences on how we do this innovation thing better, and then also on how you see engineers making a big impact on brain and brain research, something that people would not imagine since they all have this over here in some narrowly defined sort of. So you want to pick either one of those or both and have a chance to talk a bit about it?
Well, our research strategy has been to sort of focus on challenges at two levels. There are what I call an intermediate set of challenges. And the intermediate set of challenges that I can think of are the issues of energy, for example, water, things like that. I call them intermediate because very often in a 20, 30, 40-year time frame, people often come up with some very, very creative solutions. If you look at history, aluminum was the most expensive metal just a couple of hundred years ago. Today, it's the least expensive, one of the least expensive metals that's around, and largely because we've come up with new technologies for, you know, converting bauxite into aluminum. It's also one of the most plentiful metals in the world. If you look at natural gas, just 10 years ago, people thought we were going to run out of this commodity in the next 20, 30 years. Today, because of fracking technology, you know, we think we can survive for the next 150 years without a whole lot of disruption. So I suspect we'll, in the next few years, maybe 10 years, maybe 15 years, come up with solutions for addressing energy problems, water problems, and so forth. The longer-term problems are things that, you know, we want to be, since Mark is here, let me use a sports metaphor here. We want to be where the puck is going to be in the next 20, 30, 40 years too. And some of the things that we are looking at is reverse engineering, if you will, the brain. You know, how can we look at this amazing thing that we have all inherited from nature? How can we understand this organ in all its complexity, because it defines us, it defines our personality, it defines all the things that we bring to the table. How can we understand this little organ and try to make sense of it? What is more, come up with an ability to replicate some of the things that it does. And that's what our goal is going to be. It's not something that's going to get addressed in the next 5 years or 10 years. It's going to be a long-term project, but it's going to involve the whole university community. That's the beauty of it, because, you know, what happens to us when we listen to a symphony, for example? What happens when we watch a play? You know, there are emotions there that get generated in our brain. How do we figure that out and eventually replicate that in silicon or in firmware? That's the challenge. So 30, 40 years, I think we'll be playing a different sort of game because we'll have understood this amazing organ. So we look at both intermediate problems as well as long-term problems. That's what it's all about.
I think one of the strengths that you've brought to Michigan State, and I think other deans have brought to Michigan State, is this capacity to think about not simply energy, water, food as being isolated silos, but really there are solutions to be found at the intersection of those problems in ways that could have profound impact. How do you go about figuring that out?
Well, that's one of the amazing things of, you know, Michigan State University. This is a place where, you know, just given the diverse nature of things that we do here, we have collisions of ideas that, you know, I've used this word twice now, that cannot take place in a smaller setting. I often talk about the fact that we have people in entomology looking at this fly that's able to locate crickets, despite the fact that it has ears that are located so closely. You and I are given a pair of ears and they are spread apart, and the time difference that it takes for the sound to reach one ear relative to the other allows us to localize a sound. This fly is able to locate a cricket, you know, 100 feet away, despite the fact that its ears are so close by. Now, this gentleman who's working in this area had conversations with one of our faculty members, and he has now produced a hearing aid that is based on this, you know, that mimics how a fly listens, come up with a new generation of hearing aids. It's those kinds of things that can happen in a university setting, and Michigan State is one of the few places where this can happen. We have faculty sort of interacting with each other, and when that happens, it's easier for deans to interact with each other. So lots of exciting things can happen.
Yeah. I think the example that you just gave about this fly and the hearing aids
are
the kind of connection that is very difficult for funders, for legislators at the state and national level. Who are trying to think about these very near-term needs of budget, to recognize this connection between something that's so esoteric, from there, why are you studying these flies, to something that, you know, essentially has the potential to provide hearing capacity for people who right now are struggling with the current technology. And so how do you think we build some trust about these connections? How do we talk about that?
You know, societies and civilizations that have taken the long-term view have always benefited. When electricity was discovered 300 years ago, nobody figured out that it was going to have such an impact on our lives. You know, it was a theoretical idea at that time. And right now, if an electricity, you know, supply is cut off for 15 minutes, you know, everything wakes loose.
For our current students, about a minute and a half. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Because you cannot communicate. You cannot, you know, there's, you know, the whole world becomes chaotic. Just 100 years ago, or 80 years ago, when quantum mechanics came out, it was just an idea. It was a mathematical concept at that time. But today, your cell phones, your everything around you, all electronics, is based on this quantum mechanics. It's very difficult to see what some of these things that we are working on is going to do for our lives 50, 60 years ago. But if we don't invest, if people had not come up with this quantum mechanics idea, I shudder to think what this world would look like. And societies that have invested, you know, in these kinds of things come out ahead in the long run. And it's, I agree with you that it's very difficult to see these things, you know, when you're working on these things. But unless society invests resources on ideas that seem esoteric, I think as a society, as a civilization, we'll be poorer.
Well, I think that it is, you know, it's hard. I mean, Mark has a lot of decisions to make as well with budgets, and coaches make decisions, whether it's about who they recruit or what they do with their players in a particular time, that have both short and long-term implications. And we've been blessed with coaches like Tom Izzo, who really, even in the beginning, were doing things for the program. Right. I mean, the time frames are a bit shorter than what we're talking about, but still are really committed about building something for someone else.
Right.
And I think that the in the past, because of the privileges of our country, we were able to maybe err on the side of some short-term things. Then we got awakened with Sputnik and Russia, and we sort of rushed and did this massive effort to make sure we were at the forefront of basic research. And now we're sort of in that same period where the rest of the world is not just producing what you would call your sort of routine engineers, but they will soon, whether they come to the United States or not, be able to produce really engineers that will compete with us on this knowledge frontier. And that's where our country's competitiveness will be lost gradually. It won't be tomorrow.
Right.
But over a course of time, we have to invest in our country's competitiveness in this collaborative and competitive world for people's kids and grandkids, so that they really have a chance to right. be successful. And that's really hard.
I think our kids today have such – I have, you know, three young kids, and their appetite for innovation is so strong. And at times we as leaders, as deans, as presidents, as athletic directors right. have to remember that you know, as we get older, they're staying the same, right. and their insatiable appetite for innovation right. is growing exponentially, and we need to stimulate that. We right. need to keep that alive.
I agree with you. I mean, I think this notion of paying forward is very, very critical, very, very critical. Today, when you see the successes that we are having in the football, you know, or basketball, or, you know, baseball, that has come about because of the investments you've made, long-term investments that the president has made, you have made, in building things here that are going to outlast us. You know, when we talk about the brain in the College of Engineering, we are talking about benefits that would accrue to us and to society long after we are gone, long after we are, you know, gone. And it's that notion that has to be. We've got to, you know, grow our seed corn. And that's absolutely critical, whether it's in the football field or whether it's in engineering. Mm-hmm. And our leaders have to come to grips with that, because if we don't do, I think we'll be diminished because of that.
I agree.
Well, Satish, it's been great having you, and I think our listeners can understand why we're so excited to have you as a part of Michigan State, and also in ways that are not simply a leader for the College of Engineering, but a leader for the intellectual enterprise of Michigan State. So thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be part of this team here. And thanks.
That was MSU College of Engineering Dean Satish Udpah talking with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis on MSU Today here on AM 870 WKAR. To hear their conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. And please visit MSU's College of Engineering online at egr.msu.edu.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the MSU Alumni Association. Join the MSUAA family, and you're instantly connected to our network of over 500,000 Spartans in every corner of the world. Whether it's community, connections, career growth, or class, that's what the MSU Alumni Association is all about. Join the world's largest Spartan Nation community at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life. Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.